about a lot of different things this month with different people and different age groups as well. But today we're specifically focusing on teens and how to help teens develop self-determination and advocacy skills. And our guest tonight is Melissa Reagan. And she is from an organization or a company called Wonder. And we'll learn a lot about that tonight as well. But they have a whole curriculum that is a kind of a customized way to help your teen to be able to work on these skills, especially the ones that you find they need the most help in, right? So welcome, Melissa, and thank you for joining us tonight and just sharing some of your wisdom. And I know it's a passion for you too, because you have sons who have struggled in their transitioning. And so I just thank you for being here and from sharing from that experience as well as your passion and just your knowledge.
Oh, thank you so much, Peggy. Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to share whatever I can.
Yeah, definitely. So as we're kind of getting started, I just want our audience to know, if you're joining us live, you can react, you can post up questions, comments, and we will get to those as they come on. Just under in the feed, put those in, and we'll be able to see those and be able to post them up on the screen. But what specifically is self-determination and advocacy? I guess because a lot of times, especially for parents who haven't been in the public school system, we have a lot that have homeschooled basically all the way through, and maybe these words are a little foreign. So what are we talking about?
That's a really good question. Thanks for bringing it up, because it can be a little bit foreign to even those of us who are in special education or who are not. But self-determination is really being able to identify the things that you're good at, the things that maybe are challenges for you or that you need help with, but also being able to understand what your interests are and being able to align those so that you can do the things that you like and you enjoy in your life. And then self-advocacy is being able to find the people and the resources you need to be able to make yourself successful in those things that you're interested in and you're passionate about.
And that having those two things can go a long way. And I think even kids that don't struggle have a hard time sometimes with both of those things, because they spend so much time in school focusing on academics. And really what we're gonna be talking about tonight is teaching your child to know themselves and to know what they're gonna be good at and how to fit into wherever they do best. And I think there's a lot of well-educated college students that don't even know how to do that. So they may be ahead of the curve.
That is true, Peggy. And I think what's really important is what you said is being able to know yourself and trust yourself. And you know, when you're a kid and you know, you're constantly told that, you know, you should listen to adults or listen to your teacher, or, you know, you can kind of doubt yourself. And I think if you're a kid with disabilities, and that even gets compounded. Just being able to recognize, and a lot of times too, what we've seen in classrooms where we've gone in and had kids take like transition assessments, which evaluate their strengths. It's really, it's sad in one way, but it's also really happy to see kids who've never had someone tell them before that they have strengths. I can see their faces when they're like, oh, wow, like there are actually things that I'm good at, because they so often hear like, you need help with, you know, writing, reading, speaking, listening, and, you know, then that.
But, right. Yeah, I think that's one thing. I do a whole talk on transition skills. And the one thing I do really hone in with the parents is that these are the years you have to, yes, you're going to be working on those things that they struggle in, but you need to spend more time on what they're good at, because that is what they're going to use. And focusing, even like just for my middle son, school became about podcasting, video editing, you know, all of these things that he did so well at. And yes, we still worked on the reading because he had to learn to read, but we weren't going to take all the time away from developing what he was good at just because he needed to work on those things that he was lacking in. It would have been self-defeating for him. And it was at one point.
But I imagine you saw such amazing growth and saw him blossom in ways when he was doing the things he loved that you
right
hadn't seen before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there were things that he had to read that he wanted to read. And he would push through and struggle with those things because he wanted to get them done. And I think, you know, as you talk about self-determination, I'm assuming you see that happen with students, that when they see where they're gifted, they can hone in on using that in other areas where they struggle.
Exactly. We kind of joke with my son about using his powers for good instead of evil. And, you know, the good is the thing that he wants to do. And if, you know, he wants a pizza at midnight, he will spend, you know, 2 hours on the internet or on the phone trying to get it delivered. That's something he wants. But if it's doing his math homework, you know, or doing his Spanish homework, every excuse in the world not to do that. So,
right. So he is motivated.
Somewhat by some things.
Right, exactly. So the one thing that I do want to touch on too is I know a lot of parents come to me and their kids are at the point of being very defeated. And they almost say, what do I do now? And they kind of realize maybe I've been part of this problem. But how do I turn things around and really start helping my child to see that there are a lot of good things that they can do and to kind of push them towards that?
Well, if I can share a personal experience, my oldest son was born with a physical disability as well as having some ADHD spectrum issues. And, you know, our family is rich in military history. My dad was in the Marine Corps. My brothers were in the Army, you know, yada, yada. And so he was going to West Point. That was his goal since he was, you know, 30 years old. He was not going to West Point. He had a physical disability that would not make it possible. And also, quite honestly, his SAT scores weren't that great either. And I didn't tell him he couldn't do it. I didn't tell him not to do it. We sat down, we looked at what the considerations were for people who got into West Point. He knew it was super competitive. Mm-hmm. He applied, he did not get in. And for about 6 months, he was broken. He was like a ship without a rudder. He enrolled in community college and dropped out. Like, I had to give him some tough love, and that was not easy for me. It was not easy for him, but he's on a better path now, so it's not at West Point either.
Right. And you do, you know, I have another friend whose son did something similar and he wanted to be in the military and, you know, he wanted to be a pilot, and there just was no way with his autism diagnosis that was going to happen. And just kind of working through that and just being alongside them and, you know, just like you did, and, you know, continually pointing out to them, this is what you do well, you know, these are the things that you can contribute and that you were made to do, and that it's not a bad thing that you don't get into West Point or fly an airplane or
not sad, let's just say
that. Mm-hmm. But it is dying to dreams. And I know I talked to a dad of a son who had nonverbal autism, and he talked about how his dreams had changed and just the grieving process. And we almost have to walk alongside our kids sometimes through that as well.
It's hard. We don't want to see, no parent wants to see their kid sad or see their kid fail or see their kid unhappy. Like, everybody wants the best for their kids. And We also want to make sure that what they want is realistic, but you know, I think if I had just told him, no, you can't do it, or, you know, or if I had discouraged him from doing it, he would always wonder and think that that's achievable. And that was the process he had to go through for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I can see that it is important that they kind of get to those ends on their own. I know I learned the hard way too, and that's always helped me. So.
That is so true.
Mm-hmm. So what are some ways that you can help your child figure out what they are good at? I mean, we have all these tests that tell them what they're not good at, but how do we start the process? And I know a lot of parents are going, you know, especially when their kids, I remember when we started high school, it was like this panic thing. It's like your child has to know what they are going to do when they graduate, so you can transition plan, you know, prepare and write your transcript. And I thought, oh my goodness, it changes every year. But, you know, parents ask, well, how do I determine what kind of job skills, you know, best suit my child, you know, and all of these questions we have, but helping our child to navigate, what do we do and how do we get started?
There are a lot of resources out there, and it can certainly be very overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And of course, the path you take, I think a lot of times depends on kind of your own child and your own child's situation. There are thousands of skill assessments, you know, are you good at this or that, and thousands of tests. And none of my kids have ever been particularly good at assessments and testing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have kind of tried to do at our house, and one of the things we talk about in the course too, is helping kids identify what their interests are. Because mm-hmm. if you can identify what their interests are, then it's really easy to find different things that they might be able to work in, or different paths, or find volunteer opportunities and job shadowing. So like I have one of my sons really likes animals, and mm-hmm. you know, being a veterinarian probably is not going to be the path he takes, but he volunteers at the dog shelter, and he has, you know, well, maybe I'll be a vet tech, or, you know, and there's no, you know, yes, there are assessments you could take to maybe find that out. But also, mm-hmm. I can just talk to him. I can just ask him. It doesn't have to be this mm-hmm. series of complicated tests. And also in our area, Voc Rehab will help kids with disabilities who have an IEP. They have a series of testing that they can also help identify kids with specific skills and help also try mm-hmm. to find them jobs.
Yeah, I know there's one that I recommend in when I give my transition talk. It's called the tag test.
Yeah.
And it costs $3, and even homeschooled parents can use it. And it's, you know, it's one of those things that, and it would be a good transition into your program, because it basically identifies all the different, you know, sub programs that basically you offer in your curriculum, that you can kind of hone in on. These are the weak points where the student is lacking.
What I really love about the TAG assessment, and that's created by the folks at the University of Oklahoma, mm-hmm. the Zero Center, they're really great, is that it, first of all, the student takes the assessment. So you get the student's input, but then mm-hmm. the parent takes it. And then, mm-hmm. you know, you kind of get a more full picture of the student, and then you have a third person take it, someone who sees the kid, maybe a physical therapist or a social worker or a speech language pathologist or someone mm-hmm. else outside. And so by getting all this input, you really get this holistic picture of the kid that isn't, because I know sometimes I'll say, like, my kid can't do that. And, you know, the teacher will say, yeah, he can. And, you know, my kid will take advantage of, you know, the easiest path.
Exactly. Mom's around.
I can't do that. I really appreciate those three views. Mm-hmm. And we use those in our transition curriculum to help determine outcomes for kids, to help get them on the path to being ready for transition.
Yeah. It's a nice pairing. I guess I'm I talked about that test for a couple of years, and then I found you this last year, and I thought, oh, this is a nice meld, and yes, it is.
They're also working on a new assessment for kids. The tag is currently for kids with more moderate forms of disability, and they're working on one right now for kids with more severe levels of disability, and that should be out in the spring, I believe.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to definitely have to make a note about that.
Yeah, I think they're looking for beta testers for that, so if you know of anyone.
Okay. Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Writing it down now. So, you know, one of the major things that our kids need to work on, especially for advocacy, is communication skills. What are some of the areas that kids usually, or teens, are usually lacking in their ability to communicate, that kind of across the board, or maybe just in more prevalent than other communication issues?
I think what I've seen is that kids do not know, and I'm speaking about kids that can communicate verbally, of course. Verbal communication is just doesn't exist. It's about texting and about, you know.
Oh, yes.
And what's really, you know, as a high school English teacher, that pains me, you know. And this lack of communication really frequently, you know, because they're texting and you can't read someone's kind of demeanor in text, it leads to a lot of misunderstandings and a lot of, you know, my son got a job at a coffee chain, a well-known coffee chain. Mm-hmm. And when he got hired in June, he said, I need, or the end of May, right? I need 4th of July off because it's my girlfriend's birthday and we're going someplace. He gets hired, 4th of July comes. He forgets to remind his boss about that day he needs off.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't check the schedule. He's on it. You know, and because he thought, you know, well, I told her 2 months ago, she doesn't, you know,
right.
She doesn't have anything else to remember. He was really shocked when he was kind of in trouble.
Yes, that self-centered kind of mentality that everything that I know, everyone else knows, that's truly a difficult one. Yeah, and that communication isn't just the words, it's the emotions. It's so much more involved with that, and especially kids on the spectrum. Definitely, that's a hard one.
Yeah, I'm seeing it a lot, though, even in kids without disabilities. And, you know, this, you know, just failure to verbally communicate is, and the preference to chat or text or, you know.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a one-way conversation. When you're, you know, they shoot videos or do, you know, selfies or the, you know, the quick, what Instagram allows you 45 seconds. And so you have to like tell your whole story in 45 seconds. And you're, yeah, we listened to audiobooks on our trip. We just got back from, and, you know, I was talking to my daughter. We listened to Black Beauty and we just started Little Women. And, you know, that literature expresses emotion, you know, and it's the conversations and, you know, you pick up all those things. We've lost that art of having long, deep conversations and really pulling things out of people instead of just, you know, the quick, hi, I'm okay, and let's move on.
And it becomes, everything becomes superficial, and, you know, it's so much easier to be mean to someone if you're not looking at them in the face or,
yeah.
You know, it's the same with letter writing. I still make my kids handwrite thank you notes when they get a gift in there. You know, it's like I'm asking them for a kidney. I mean, it's write a thank you note. Someone, you know, it's a gift. Like, come on.
Definitely. Yeah. You know, so your curriculum focuses on communication skills as well as interpersonal skills, which is kind of what we've transitioned into because they're so intertwined, you know, and it's the verbal, it's the nonverbal. And so I think, but when you're not around a lot of people and you're doing all these things on more tech, or devices, you lose that ability to interpret even what people are reacting or saying through nonverbal communication.
I think so. And you bring up another really good point about not being around people as much or even kind of having different types of experiences. And so, you know, when my son was at a job when he was much later in life and he hadn't had a job before, mm-hmm. you know, this idea of work ethic was really foreign to him. Like, what do you mean a work ethic? Like, I showed up, like, you know, what do I mean? I have to iron my pants or I should be on time so that the person who's waiting for me, waiting to leave for me to get there can leave. You know, these are things that he had never experienced. And now as a 21-year-old, he was experiencing and people expected him to have had these experiences already. So that was
right
part of the interpersonal skills, I think, that mm-hmm. we expect people to have but don't explicitly teach.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think our school system, and even as homeschoolers, we do this too, is we have an assignment, you do the assignment, and then you pass on, you know? And so when we explain to our boys, you know, when you're done with the job, do whatever else needs to be done. You know, don't sit around and say, well, nobody gave me any other work to do. Well, it's not like a teacher. It's you're doing something for the benefit of the company that's hired you. So look for something else to do. that was just completely foreign, you know, that I could go above and beyond and they're not going to pay me more. And that's okay because, you know, trying to explain to them, yes, it's your value as a human, you know, to this company, and they're going to want to keep you around longer, give you a raise and promote you if you're doing well at this other things that you've been given.
I remember my first job in high school, my boss told me, if you get time to lean, you get time to clean. So, you know, I learned that if I wasn't doing something that would, you know, kept me busy, someone would find something for me to do that I might not like as much. So
exactly. Yep. So true. Yeah. So another thing that, you know, we have to transition to our kids. We have goals for them, but how do we get them to make the goals for themselves?
I'm so glad you asked that question, because so often, as you said, we have goals for our kids, but, you know, we don't share them with our kids, or we don't sit down with our kids and say, hey, what are your goals? And, you know, part of the transition team IEP meeting is supposed to be to work together to set those goals. But mm-hmm. I've been in schools where high school kids don't even attend their transition IEP meetings or any IEP meetings. Mm-hmm. I met a parent once who said, my son doesn't know he has an IEP. And I'm like, your son is 17 years old and he's in high school. I think he knows.
Right.
He was trying to protect him, and I appreciate that. But, you know, if you can't sit down and set goals together, and it's hard to hear things, or it's hard to hear that your child's goals aren't what your goals are, or to hear that their goals are to be a fighter pilot, and you know that they're not going to be, but I don't think that means you don't have the discussion. And we have this thing called person-centered transition planning in the state of New Jersey, where Rutgers University actually goes into the transition meetings and works with the parents. And it's kind of like counseling, because you're all in there together and you're figuring out, like, you know, one of the examples is a young man who is in a wheelchair, and he says to his parents, well, I want to be a therapist. And they're like, you can't be a therapist. And he's like, well, why can't I? And he has a cognitive disability. So there really wasn't any reason why he couldn't be a therapist, you know? So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just had to find some way to adapt what he was doing. And definitely. Yeah. That is so true. They can dream much bigger a lot of times than we can. If we remove those barriers of, well, it hasn't been done, or we've never seen it done, and so therefore it won't be.
And a lot of it too is, you know, we don't want our kids to fail. And you know, it's kind of corny, but there's that saying that fail really means first attempt in learning. And when my oldest son, you know, he had two false starts at college, and now he's in the right, you know, he found the right place for him. But, you know, for us, the failure was, you know, we didn't want him to be sad or hurt or whatever, you know. And then there's the financial aspect. Well, it costs money to go to college, and you've had these two opportunities that you weren't successful at. And then, you know, you have brothers and sisters who are looking up to you, and, you know, so, and helping him to find his voice to say, yes, I know I made this mistake or I made that mistake, but here's what I've learned from it, and here's what's going to be different next time. And there's, you know, a certain level of maturity too that has to happen first.
Right. Yeah. You can't just squash the goal before they try to achieve it, because who knows? They may, or again, like you said, they may learn something in the process that they needed to learn to get to a more adequate goal. And all of us shoot to the moon, you know. If we have a good self-worth about us, we think we can do way more than we can. And sometimes it takes those humiliating things in our lives to bring us a little more down to earth.
Yeah, and it's like the growth mindset too. Like, we have to think that they can improve. We have to think that they can do better and they can do more. Because if we don't think that, you know, they're gonna rise to the levels and the expectations that we set for them. And that's, you know, why my kid would pretend like he couldn't write a, you know, an essay in school when he was home writing, you know, comic books and graphic novels. So, you know.
Yeah, I just remember my brother. He has severe dyslexia, and he said he was told day after day in high school just that he would never accomplish anything, that he'd never have, you know. And he goes, "I was going to prove them wrong." But how many kids actually have the perseverance to do that? Not many. The other ones just believe it, and they succumb to this, "I'm never going to do everything because that's what everybody's told me, and this is my life."
That makes me sad that that happens, and it does happen every day. People tell kids they can't do something or they can't be something, and that's why it's so important for kids to find their voice and to find their people, their tribe, their, you know, that person that's going to support them and, you know, encourage them and challenge them and tell them, don't be afraid to fail, or, you know what, let's see what you need to do to be a fighter pilot. You know, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, and then assess it and figure out what's doable, if it's doable. Definitely. So, you know, as these are great things to start, definitely, even before the transition period with children even younger, and to build on them. But if they aren't working on them, especially when they're in the teens, then we see them, you know, floundering in college and jobs afterwards, because they it's You're, it's almost too hard to catch up because you've got so many stresses for what you need to do just to keep up with a job or school. So I definitely, the when I looked at your curriculum, and so I have to transition into that, because the one thing that I really liked about it was that it was from teens speaking to teens. It wasn't like, "Here, I'm an adult and I'm telling you know, this is great." It's the sharing their stories, you know, stories of kids who have, you know, been successful at whatever the unit covers and what it meant in their lives to really learn and change and to utilize that skill well.
I so appreciate you saying that and that you recognize that, because we worked really hard to make sure that it was authentic. Every lesson, every story, every, you know, skill is something that, you know, kids are really going to have to do. You know, like one of the activities in the Identifying Personal Strengths course is that the kids have to pretend like they're at a job interview, and we've all been at sitting at that interview table and heard that question, what are your strengths? What are you good at?
Right.
And you can't just sit there and say, oh, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So we help them identify them and then learn to talk about them and then apply it to whatever job they're looking for.
Right.
And it's all actionable. And we used, you know, real teen stories. We really try to do it at a level that's not condescending and mm-hmm. was fun. And, you know, using the software is something that is high interest to kids too. So.
Right. Yeah. We're always having parents saying, what can I get on the computer? So as long as it's not like my kids who wanted to beat typing, because that wasn't going to happen. It's like typing is one of those skills you just have to do over and over again. And they were like rushing through it. And I'm like, okay, we're getting the old fashioned book out. You're doing one page at a time.
That's like brown font.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, you have to be kind of picky about how you choose that curriculum. And how it was written.
That's so funny.
So, yeah. Yeah. Too funny. But yeah, teens have a good way of not doing things, too. So.
They sure do. Especially in if it's something that doesn't interest them or something they think that they can negotiate their way out of.
Right. But. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we had a few of those heart-to-heart discussions in high school. But it's good. It teaches them, I think, a little bit of, you know, starting the process of, I want to advocate for myself. They maybe don't have the right words. And as a parent, you need to understand that this is a skill that they're developing and not get so put off by them challenging you. And I think we have a hard time with teens when they challenge us, but they're starting to stretch those muscles of independence. And you have to kind of wade through that. Do you have any advice for parents who are kind of on the other end when that?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I do believe that the best way to help kids build self-advocacy is to start letting them practice at home. And it is hard.
Yeah.
But as an example, my oldest son wanted to stop taking his ADD medicine when he went to college.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, you know, I don't think that's a good idea. And we talked to his doctor, and his doctor was like, I'm not sure that's a good idea, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, let's talk about why you want to do it. And I have to give credit to his doctor, who is phenomenal, but he's, you know, he asked me to leave the room, and he sat down and they talked about the pros and the cons, and at the end of the day, he decided not to do it. He was like, I just want to feel what it's like to be me, and I want to make friends, you know, with the real, I want people to make friends with the real me in this setting, and, you know, he stood up to me about it, but he did it in a way that was respectful. He did it. He
right.
did it for himself. And mm-hmm. I had to honor that, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and he had to deal with the, you know, ramifications of that decision. And
right. And I think that's important too, is to, you know, press back on them. This is, it's your responsibility, but it's also what you're taking on what happens because of your decision as well. And it doesn't come back on me. At least completely. Sometimes it does a little bit.
No, but it's really important, because I think a lot of times, I can't speak for everyone, but I gave my son a pass for things because, you know, of his disability. And I didn't do him, I did him a disservice, I think, actually, because he didn't suffer the consequences that his brother did for a lot of things, or that his sisters will. And because of it, he didn't know what, you know, failure was, or, you know, when it came to making decisions. And,
right.
you know, we have a lesson about, like, the decision-making process. He's super impulsive. Like, you know, I'm going to go spend $1,200 on virtual reality. And, you know, that was your college money, but, you know. And having to deal with those, well, I can't, if I return it, I lose 20% because of the, it's open, well, that's the consequence of the action that you, the decision that you made. And those are hard lessons to learn for, I think, parents and kids.
Right. Yeah. When my oldest went, well, he first went to welding school at 17, and being on the spectrum, well, he didn't want to be diagnosed, and so we left him in Jacksonville, Florida, with nobody he knew, and went to school for 9 months, and he learned a lot of things. He got him crying on the phone, "I'm sorry, I'm in Texas, you're in Florida. I can't help you. Yes, I know you're connected with the church. You're going to have to ask somebody for help there." And so it was hard. But then when he came back home and tried to get a welding job, he just couldn't. It was when the economy collapsed, and he decided he was going to go back to college, or go to college, which he didn't want to do. But we gave him the choice too of being re-diagnosed, because he hadn't been diagnosed since 5. And he said, "No, I don't want any accommodations." And so he has gone through 4 years of college already, 1 year left, and I have had many anxiety attacks that I've been texted about. But he has advocated for himself to professors who did not grade him equally and actually won the cases, and I'm really proud of him. But yet he knew when we had that discussion, just like you were talking about, of this is what you're going to take on if you choose not to get the help. And that was the choice he made. And so every time it would come back, I would say, "Remember this discussion we had? You can always get diagnosed again and you can ask for help." "Nope, I'm not going to do it." So, yeah.
Good for him, though. I mean, you have to respect that. And, as a parent, I mean, aren't you amazed? Aren't you so amazed at
Oh,
what he's accomplished? And
definitely. Yeah, I'm so proud of him for just how he's persevered and really just pressed on. It wasn't anything I ever foresaw him doing. And we'll be giddy when he graduates next year. So Sarah has a question for us. She said, "Do you think that accountability can help with self-advocating?"
that is a great question. Sarah, I do think accountability can help with self-advocating. I think when young people, especially teens, whether or not they have a disability, being held accountable for what they've done helps lead them to self-advocacy because then they only have themselves to, I don't want to say blame, but if you're holding yourself accountable and then you're kind of using that as a way to self-advocate, then you find your voice, you find your people, you find the resources, you find the people. And, I tended to do a lot of stuff for my kids that I shouldn't do. So I think that's very
If we
true.
all do that.
Sarah's right. Accountability is so important. They have to be held accountable.
Yeah, about 2 months ago, and I'm just cringing because I left out the bucket. I cleaned the bathrooms downstairs, but I have not cleaned my kids' bathrooms in 2 months. And I've left out the cleaning bucket and no one has used it. And I'm thinking, okay, well, I don't even want to walk into those bathrooms. I have no idea what they look like, but they're using them, not me. So,
You have to, yeah, you have to stick to it. When my oldest son was having these false starts at school, and then he was going to take some time off, and then he'd want to go back, and we had to have a conversation saying, listen, you're 19 years old now. If you are not going to be going to school, you need to get a full-time job, and you need to start looking for your own place to live. And that was a real difficult decision that we had to think about a very long time. And but what happened was he was capable of doing these things. He was capable of going to school or getting a job, and he was not doing these things. He was staying home playing video games for all night and sleeping all day, and that's not, that's not acceptable for us. So that was a huge tough love moment, and he moved out. He got an apartment with four other guys. You would die because it was such a mess every time I'd go over there. And but he did it, and he's, you know, to this day, he credits it for helping him make the right decision about returning back to school.
Oh, yeah. Well, Sarah said thank you. I agree.
Oh, thanks, Sarah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for watching, Sarah. Yeah, and anyone else, if you have questions, we've got about 20 minutes left, so we would love to know what you're thinking or questions you might have. Just we're talking about advocacy, self-advocacy, and self-determination in teens, especially. But like we talked about earlier, these are skills that we can start teaching kids at very young ages. It's just when they are teens, we really want them to start learning them. Because, you know, schools often talk about transition skills and transitioning out of school into whatever's after school. And so often as homeschoolers, this is sometimes a new area to venture into. But now that parents are writing their own IEPs, especially with therapists, because we're finding that the IEP now is not a tool that is just used in the schools anymore. We have doctors asking for students' IEPs. We have the Social Security Administration now asking for IEPs. We, you know, if they want accommodations on any types of work tests or after school work training and those types of things, they're asking for our IEPs for our students. And if we don't have them, we're at a disadvantage as homeschoolers. So, so yes, and like you said earlier, Melissa, is having your student involved in that process. And I know even a friend of mine who said that she's having her daughter sign them, I think at age 10.
Nice.
Just like, I'm agreeing to these goals just as much as my therapist and my mom. And so, they have to have a buy-in. It's about them, and they're the one doing the work.
I agree 100%. I think they should be involved and they should understand. I mean, technically, you know, kids are supposed to start with their transition planning when they're 16, but I know that doesn't happen a lot. My youngest daughter who gets speech, she goes to her IEP meetings every twice a year, and she sits there and, you know, she's like, I'm the only kid that has to go to these, you know, she's in third grade. And I'm like, sorry, you know, you need to be informed. You need to understand why you're leaving, you know, whatever class you're leaving and coming down here and what progress you expect and, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Sarah had another thing she wanted to talk about, IEP meetings. And she said, I feel like many of the meetings are filled with adults making plans for the student. And we had talked about this earlier too. My son would come to all the meetings. However, I didn't feel like he really made the choice. He just agreed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess I've never been involved in an IEP meeting in a public school setting, but is there something that parents can do if their student is in an IEP meeting? I know, and some of our parents actually have IEPs when they homeschool with the public school because they get services. So this is kind of a cross question too for our community as well. But what can a parent do to help their student get more of a voice in those meetings?
First of all, Sarah, thank you so much for that question. And that makes me really sad, actually, that your son felt like he not only didn't have a voice, but he wasn't part of the planning. He was not part of making any decisions. And he just felt like he had to agree. That is really upsetting, but it does happen quite often. And I think that two things parents can do, look into what's called PCAS, person-centered transition planning. It's something that's done out of Rutgers University here in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And the student leads the IEP meeting. The student invites the teachers and the people he wants there or she wants there. And the student is the facilitator, really. And it's up to the student they have guidance. It's not just like, hey, go figure out what you're going to do. But it's more about helping them identify their interests. Because if I tell you, you know, these are your choices or these are your options, and it it's not something I'm interested in.
Right.
Why am I going to be engaged in the rest of the school day and the rest of what we're doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get buy-in when they're little, but when they become teens, you're only going to get buy-in if they have a say in it and they really believe that what you're doing is meaningful.
And it should be meaningful. You know, you're talking about their futures. And,
yeah.
You know, to tell somebody that, you know, it's hard when you're 16 years old to think about, you know, when we first did, my son did his first transition planning, you know, they have the boxes you got to check. What do you think you're going to do? What do you think your living conditions are going to be? He's like, I'm going to live at home with mom. Like, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's a great time to start having those dialogues. Like, you know, that evolved to, you know, he's going to live in New York City in a skyscraper on the penthouse, which was, you know, the complete other extreme, but, you know, well, what is rent costs? You know, when my son moved out of the house, he was making minimum wage and he pays rent. And the first time they got an oil tank filled, he was like, Mom, I need $400. And, you know, you don't know that you have to put oil in your heater to get heat in the winter.
Heat, right? all those life lessons, yes.
Sarah, I hope that answers your question and about having your son be part of the IEP meetings. And just if your school isn't doing that for you, or if they're not letting your kid be part or lead them, I'd be happy to help you find additional resources to make sure that that happens.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your how to connect with you and Wonder. And I'm going to bring up your website here. So this is, let's see if I can figure out. There we go. And it's under you here. I'm going to remove your name so we can see your face. There we go. So this is specifically the Wonder Academy transition curriculum. And so why don't you just talk about it? Tell me where to scroll and I will do that.
Absolutely. If you don't mind clicking on the button where it says transition, so I think it's learn more.
Learn more. Sorry. Okay. No, that's okay.
Yeah, perfect. So you mentioned the TAG assessment earlier, and the TAG assessment, as we talked about, is one way to help plan for transition. And these eight courses are actually aligned to the outcomes of the TAG assessment. As students work through the skills and activities in each of these courses, they actually gain the skills that they need to become ready for transition. So each of the courses has different activities that students can do. And if you take a look at the preview online content button, I think it will give you
introduction to goal setting.
So two kind of cool things I want to mention about what we've done here is if you see the little settings button up in the corner, the little wheel, is we put the accommodations in at the student level to help encourage self-determination and self-advocacy. So if kids want stuff read to them, or if they want it in a different language, or they want it in large text, they can highlight it, they can change the color, they're making those choices, which was really important to us. It translates into, I think it's 64 different languages, but we wanted that to be something kids choose for themselves. There's also formative assessments built in as they're working through.
Right.
They can't move along till they get it right. And it's not that we are, they're not graded. They're just really kind of meant for us to help see what they're getting right and what they might need help with. And then at the end of every course, we have kind of like a summative assessment that's project-based. So for example, in the identifying personal skills course, as I was mentioning earlier, they have to pretend like they're at a job interview and talk about what their skills are. So, what they're good at and how it applies to the job. Where the identifying and overcoming weaknesses course, it's the same thing. You know, we've all also had that same question at the job interview. Well, what are your weaknesses? And you're like, I'm a perfectionist, or I'm always on time, you know? It's being able to help them find something that's sincere and authentic to say and practice it and write it and own it. And
right. It mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's different levels of there's some instruction, there's some videos that make it more relational, and then there's assessments built in, and you just have a really good mix of content so you don't feel like it's getting monotonous, because it kind of jumps from one thing to another. They gave me a trial, so I popped through it.
One of the things too I really appreciate, I taught high school English, and a lot of my students came to me with lots of vocabulary questions. So the other thing we really try mm-hmm. to do is explicitly teach vocabulary.
Because mm-hmm.
when you're trying to identify characteristics, you know, maybe you don't know what transcendental means. Like, there are words or charisma, you know. So we really tried hard to, you know, not just define those words, but show them, like, what does it mean?
Right. Yeah. Because it is so hard when we don't use those words in everyday language, and then to say, well, this is what you should be like. And so, yes, showing them is definitely a better way to learn. We learn better by copying, or I always said, one person said, I learned better by watching somebody do it badly and realizing I shouldn't do the same thing as well. So we learn through someone else's experience. But
that's true. You know. The one thing they all seem to get is sarcasm, though, oddly enough.
Definitely. And then you have a place for, I wanted to show this, of just what the parent gets to see as far as the assessments. Because I know people in our community, and this would be more of the teacher administrator side in a public school, but with homeschool, you as a parent would be able to see where your student is as far as progress and what they're achieving and understanding as well. So that dual portal.
Yeah.
That was neat.
What I really appreciated as a teacher myself and as a parent is being able to have the information be projected in a way that wasn't overwhelming. Sometimes they're like, data, 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 and you're like, but I don't know. And, you know, this is what your kid took on the pretest, what they scored on the post-test, mm-hmm. and you know, then this is the average of all the assessments in the course. So it's really easy. You can see if they're stuck on something, you can see what questions they got wrong, mm-hmm. go back and review it. There are some questions that are more subjective, and you can read what they wrote and, you know, give them direct feedback through the system or, you know, one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And there are also workbook activities that are meant to be done collaboratively with students. There's reflections. They do some writing. But it's all really nicely scaffolded. They have tons of graphic organizers. It's not like, mm-hmm. here, go write a 5-paragraph essay on what your strengths are. It's like.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. And so how many modules do you have now? I know it's way more than any student could ever take.
Yeah, we designed, we also have a social emotional learning curriculum, which we created and we just released this year to complement the transition curriculum. It mm-hmm. really takes a deeper dive into the emotions and skills that students need to be successful after school. And we're seeing that there's huge lags in things like empathy and understanding and appreciating diversity. So that was really important to us, and doing it in a way that was culturally relevant and sensitive. And between the SEL courses we have and the transition courses, we have parents and teachers covered for all of high school. Mm-hmm. So depending on the pace students work at, they could get through two courses a year. They could do more if they're doing that, you know, more frequently. the challenge with transition in the public school setting is that oftentimes kids who are taking transition courses or doing transition planning are off-site, they're doing job visits or job shadowing, work sampling. So they're not always in a classroom getting this kind of explicit instruction.
Right, yeah. But it's definitely something that as parents, especially with homeschooling, if you're wanting, or you know from an assessment like the TAG test, that there are certain areas that you can add these in as classes in your high school curriculum and count them on your transcript for your student as part of their transition plan. And work on those skills as well.
And they're also, the lessons are aligned to the TEKS and the Common Core State Standards for ELA. So you can use them for ELA course.
That's great. Yeah, with so much vocabulary and other things in there that I'm sure it's definitely. All right, well, I wanna make sure to put up your, let's see here, your website. Oops, and I'm pushing the wrong buttons. Here we go. This is still in beta, so I'm.
You're doing a great job demonstrating our formative assessment, so thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Let me see here. This is where I've put it. So that is, it's Wonder, O-N-E-D-E-R.com. /transition/curriculum. That's where you can find that specific Transition Academy curriculum.
I think that we have a special for SPED homeschool parents. So if anyone's interested, we're happy to speak with them more about that.
Yeah, definitely. I know we had talked about the price and I thought it was extremely reasonable for families to use. And you can find, Wonder is also one of our partner organizations, which I'm really excited about. So you're on our website and all of our curriculum is getting moved around this month because we have so many partner organizations now that our curriculum and they're getting lost on our pages, which is a good thing, but not a good thing because we want them to find you. So I will have a dedicated page specifically for you, but we'll have your logo on another page so people can kind of find it a little easier as well. And parts of this broadcast will be on there as well, so people kind of get to interact with you and get to know your product a little bit. So yeah.
Hey, thank you so much. And I'm happy to answer any questions anyone has. Email me, give us a call, whatever works best. Happy to help out.
That's awesome. I know this is, it's such a needed area. I know when I first emailed you, I'm like, would you be willing to work with homeschoolers? Because, I mean, I give that transition talk in high school and parents are like, I mean, my parents heard me speak for the first time this last convention season, and because they still have 4 kids at home. And I have 10 siblings that are all adopted with special needs. So, at the end of the talk, I thought my dad had slept through it, actually. He asked me for the slides. He goes, I need to know about those resources you have. So, definitely one was the TAGS test and then your curriculum. And I was like, yeah, you need to know about these. So,
with all those children still at home, they need to know.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. We're kind of in the process of transitioning their house right now. So I'm learning a lot about that too. So much. But
how do you have the time, Peggy?
I don't. One thing at a time is what I do. So that'll be put in a good plug. So if anybody wants to volunteer, we got a whole list on our website of things that we need help with. And I would definitely love you to join our team. So, well, thank you so much, Melissa. I appreciate your time and just authenticity of, you know, sharing just your passion as far as, you know, this being so personal to you as well as, you know, just a way to help other families whose kids are, you know, needing these skills so that they can launch better. And and really be productive with what they can do. And I think that's important.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I'm so lucky to be part of your team and your tribe and happy to help out anybody anytime.
Awesome. Well, thanks. Thanks so much. And thank you all for joining us. We are SPED Homeschool. We are a nonprofit 501c3, and our broadcasts are funded by viewers like you. And we turn this into a podcast as well as put it on our YouTube channel. So you'll see that all transition next week, as well as we'll rebroadcast some of the shorter portions of this next week here on Facebook. But we just appreciate you being part of our community. Like I said, this month we are focusing on helping children achieve goals. And so we are talking about various ways to do that. Of course, this was on teens and self-advocacy and self-determination. But next week we're talking math, and we're going to do a roundtable discussion with Thanks for Math, with their founder and CEO, as well as two of their tutors and myself. I have a degree in physics, and we are talking about how to help your student understand math outside the textbook. And so that's going to be a fun discussion, and that'll be next Tuesday here at 8 o'clock Central again. So for joining you then. But we keep the conversation going all week long on our Facebook support group. So definitely join that group if you haven't yet. And then we'll see you again here next week. Thanks again, Melissa. And thank you all for joining us. And thanks for your questions and comments, everybody. Bye.
Thanks, Dougie.
You are welcome.